We're talking about a dark topic tonight with Dave Politis, my guest. I remember after his first appearance to talk about Volume 1 of Missing 411, I wanted to sort of put it to a test. Would government agencies give me the same response they gave to him? And sure enough, when we filed Freedom of Information request with the National Park Service and U.S. Forest Service here in Nevada to check out missing persons lists, we found out that those agencies don't maintain such lists here. And we're not all that cooperative about the cases that we knew to exist. When we come back, I have one more question for Dave about what it might be. We've heard a lot about what it isn't. I don't think he's going to give us a solid answer, but we'll give it a try, and then we'll open up the phone lines with your questions. Much more to come on Coast to Coast AM. Dave, we talked a lot tonight about what it isn't. And as in previous appearances when you've been on the show, what it isn't. Are you any closer to saying what it is? I mean, at a minimum, I guess you can say these aren't just disappearances, that people seem to be taken by something or someone, and not only taken, but transported somehow. I mean, that's basic, right?
So, not in my words. I'll leave it in the words of the parents and in the words of law enforcement. The vast majority of the time, they go back to abduction. My child was abducted. And in this latest edition, I write about it because there's a section where there are multiple disappearances in a small confined area, meaning two people disappear in close geographical proximity to one another. This happened in the 1950s in Yosemite. Two students at the University of California at Berkeley, grad school students, they didn't know each other, they weren't taking the same classes, and they didn't live in the same building. One disappeared, I think it was in June, during summer vacation. Another one disappeared 3 months later. The guys didn't know each other. The parents didn't know each other. They were both camping in the valley, and they both went for short walks. After the second one disappeared, the families found each other because they were both demanding more searches. They want the Park Service to expend more resources, et cetera, et cetera. Both parents finally got together, and they wrote a letter to President Eisenhower, and they asked for special warfare troops to come into the park and search. In their words, they felt that their kids had been abducted. And therein lies the continual theme in these, that people understand their kids, they understand the situation, they understand the psychological aspect of their family members. And law enforcement and them come to this determination more often than you would ever believe.
That still doesn't tell us what it is, but you're reluctant to point a finger.
I will say this, because a lot of people point the finger at me and they say, I got an email about 6 months ago, you know exactly what's taking these people, and you're doing a disservice to society by not naming it. So let's go back 4 years when we first started this. I might have thought it was A back then. In the last 4 years, I've got no less than 10 emails that are like doctorate dissertations. That's how long they are. Very well thought out, very sincere. They give a multitude of things I know nothing about. I'll just name one, reptilians. I know nothing about this. I've never met anyone that saw one, but I have no less than probably 50 emails of people saying, this is what's taking people.
You also hear stories that must be like flying dinosaurs, something from the sky.
Well, there's a story in this book, and I'm sure you read it, in Nevada, where a boy walked up into an area where an Indian tracker was on a ledge. It's like a 400-foot cliff, and he crawled, and he should have fallen, and they ended up finding this boy in like a crow's nest in the middle of nowhere off a cliff on an isolated mountain in the middle of Nevada. It makes no sense at all.
I mean, it could be that this is a mystery that's not solvable, or if it is solvable, it's not an answer we're going to want to hear.
There you go.
That's a small consolation or comfort to the families of those who are still missing.
I will, one more story for you is in the Western book, there's a story about a guy named Alfred Bielhartz. In 1938, he was visiting Rocky Mountain National Park with his family. They were walking about 35 feet above a river, and they said that their boy was right behind them. He was 5 years old. They turn around, he's gone. Call the Park Service. Immediately, they get approval from the Department of Fish and Game to block the river. That's the place everyone always goes. They went to the river. they didn't find him. And there's pictures in the book of this river, and there's probably 500 guys searching this river in a 1 mile stretch. They searched everywhere. They didn't find him. As the search is going on, 3,000 feet further up into the park and up in elevation, there's a husband and wife that are coming out of the high mountains, and they're sitting and they're resting, and they hear something 300 feet above them. And they get out their binoculars, and they look, and they see this little boy sitting on a ledge in this cliffy area, and they can't believe what they're looking at. And they're saying, what parent would let their child do this? This is insane. And anyhow, they don't know a kid's missing or anything, and they hike down, finally get into the basin, and they see thousands of people milling around. They still don't think anything. They drive down into Denver. Next day in the paper is Alfred's picture. And they say, oh, my gosh, this is the boy we saw up on the cliff. They drive back to the park. They tell the park people. Park people don't believe them. They split them up, and they actually think that they played some part in the abduction, and they're interviewing them. And they tell the same story. And they say, well, that's impossible. A kid could not get into that area. It's going to take us sending 20 guys up there with ropes, pitons, carabiners, because it's so difficult terrain. And plus, you know what it's called? Devil's Nest.
Huh.
Needless to say, they send a whole group of rangers up there. They search for 2 days. They didn't find anything.
Never did?
No. Never was found.
I'll touch on one more thing, and I promise I'll go to the phone lines. I think that the case that jumps out at me from the last time you were on the program is the case where it's a disappearance, a very strange disappearance for multiple reasons, and then these families see green berets that suddenly appear in the area as if searching for something. I was hoping that after we broadcast that maybe somebody who had been in the service and might have been part of that mission might have come forward. Any further developments on that? And would you like to just briefly recap that part of the story?
Actually, there's two cases in the eastern U.S. where green berets were brought in. And that was the Dennis Martin disappearance in Great Smoky Mountain National Park. And it was a Douglas Lake disappearance in the Adirondacks of New York. In the Great Smoky Mountains, Dennis disappeared almost in the presence of his dad, his grandfather, and his brother. They're playing hide-and-seek on Spence Field up in the middle of nowhere. You have to hike into this area. Dennis disappeared. There was a huge, huge search. And unbeknownst to anybody is that the green berets fly in. There's been some talk amongst some news services that they were training nearby and happened to come in. Well, if that's true, I can't find any evidence of that anywhere. And, in fact, the National Park Service didn't know why they came in. And to add mystery to that, when the green berets flew in by helicopter and landed, they established their own command post with communication center and told the Park Service they didn't want any assistance, meaning that they didn't want to work with anybody who knew the park, they didn't want to partner with anybody inside the park, and they didn't talk to anybody about what they were doing other than they said they were looking for Dennis. Well, they were there for a number of days. Nobody ever knows what their assignment was. I filed a Freedom of Information Act against the Army asking for orders on what their mission was inside the park. Not only didn't get a denial, I didn't even get a response on two separate FOIAs I filed. They never even sent anything back, nothing. So, yes, the green berets coming in is unusual. And last time I was on the show, I asked if there were ever any green berets listening to call me because I'd like to understand it. Since that time, I've gotten two emails from family members of green berets. Green berets wouldn't talk because they sign a secrecy oath. And that's the reason that's unusual. Normally, National Guards people from a community come in because they're in the community, and they come in and assist on a search. Green berets sign a secrecy oath. They don't talk about their missions. Well, this is holding true because both families who contacted me said that their parents, their brother, etc., was a green beret, and that, quote-unquote, both emails almost said the same thing. Green berets don't search for missing people.
Well, okay, that solves it. We're going to go to the phone lines now. A lot of folks been holding on, and the phone lines are full. East of the Rockies, Allison in Portland, Maine. Hi, Allison. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Boy, your shows with Mr. Politis tonight and last year and that Zodiac show, they're really creepy, and I just love it. Last year. Anyway, You brought up Australia, and I know this is probably long before the sort of time frame you're working with, but there's the very famous case there almost a century ago now of the picnic at Hanging Rock at the Ayers Rock in Australia, where a group of schoolgirls vanished. It was made into a book by Joan Lindsay and a film in the 70s by Peter Weir, a really excellent movie. And I think in the film, at least, one of the teachers somehow came back or something. I don't know how accurate that was or not, but it's a very to this day it was never quite explained. Do you know about that case and things?
I've heard of it, but we really don't know much about it.
No, I know. It just seems like a really strange one, you know. And so it shows that these things have been going on, if they have been going on for a long, long time, most likely, you know.
Ayers Rock is a strange place too. Sorry, we couldn't answer your question, Allison. West of the Rockies, Jeff in Culver City. Good morning, Jeff.
Yeah, how you doing, George and Mr. Politis? Welcome back. Yes, I often wondered about all those missing people who have just disappeared without a trace around the world, especially little children. For example, the little girl Maddie McCann vanished in Portugal, has never been found, yet on a few television news programs, they showed age-enhanced pictures of how she might look now as a teenager. You know, it's very strange that she was chosen out of all these other kids that are missing, but it seems, Mr. Politis, that someone somewhere is behind these numerous abductions, and when they show news programs like that, it's almost as if they're testing the public to try and see who's paying attention to what's happening or who can remember this kind of stuff. My question is this, Mr. Politis, do you believe these abductions could be part of some type of Nazi-like master breeding program, or if there are alien abductions being conducted, do you think the various governments know about these abductions are incapable of doing anything about it, so they just keep quiet? And I'll take your answer off there.
Thanks, Jeff.
So that's a good question in the sense that do I think the government knows about it? I believe in one of my past appearances I spoke about the FBI being on scene on many of these missing kids' cases and not taking an active role, but just quote-unquote monitoring the case. And if you look at the FBI website, they have a special section for unusual disappearances of children. Now, that's not a crime, but that's an FBI criteria and one of the reasons that they'll come in to investigate. And I find that highly unusual because the FBI was established to really investigate criminal activity. And now they're also investigating unusual disappearances. I've stated in the past, because I have friends that are agents, these guys are phenomenal at documenting things and phenomenal profilers. When I was a policeman, we would get profiling reports on what we're looking for. And I'm telling you, when we finally found the criminal, it was exactly what the profilers wrote. They were great at what they did. Now, going back to all the cases that we've documented where the FBI was on scene monitoring the case, I know that they were writing reports. And as I've stated before, these guys are really smart people. If we are smart enough to figure out that there's common elements that run through these cases, you know the FBI knows as well. I could guarantee it. They have put these pieces together much better, much faster than we have at the present time. Now, I'll go back to the Dennis Martin disappearance where the Green Berets were there. There was actually an agent on that scene. The same agent was on scene for many of the disappearances in those mountains during those time frames. As a very, very weird circumstance, I was interviewing Mr. Martin, and one of the last things I always ask anybody is I say, is there anything else about this case that wasn't made public that I should know about, or is there something missing in the documentation that I haven't talked to you about? And one of the things that Mr. Martin told me was, is that, well, Dave, the agent on this case committed suicide.
Huh.
And we did validate that he did.
It makes you wonder whether a FOIA works with the FBI. I mean, it's tough. I've done it on other subjects, and you got to really tailor the request to get specifically what you want. So I'm not sure. You've probably tried, haven't you, Dave?
Oh, we have tried many, many times. And in the rare instances where we get a report, it's almost worthless because it's redacted so much.
First-time caller Thomas in Waco, Texas. Welcome to the show, Thomas.
Hey, real quick, August 16th, 1942, the LA blimp, which is now the Goodyear blimp down in Carson, went out on patrol without its crew, was armed with machine gun and a radio, went out The wind blew it back into the base. Crew's never been found, and there was no sign of any foul play on the blimp or anything. That's documented on the web. Two, the previous caller talked about the children. There's an astronomical amount of children that disappear every year. Also, the Ortega Highway down in Costa Mesa, people disappear out of there every year. And also, Paul, I sent you an email. I was living in Phoenix for 7 years, since 1999 to 2006. I'm an aerospace engineer, and one day I was in my backyard. From Tucson to Chandler, there was almost 40 helicopters in single file that came up to Chandler, made a left turn, and went to Phoenix. I'm assuming they were going to Luke Air Force Base. Nothing on the news. Absolutely nothing on the major helicopter military convoy, and I've never seen anything like it in my life.
Well, you're saying that's somehow related to the missing people?
No, but I've never seen, to his previous, Dave had a previous show about helicopters and stuff and things, and nothing about a military activity, nothing, you know, nothing recorded, nothing on the news, major military movement of helicopters, and I've never seen anything like that and never made the news. Complete blackout.
All right, Thomas, let's see if we can get Dave to react to this. Dave, I don't know if you're familiar with the blimp case he's talking about a crew that disappears from a blimp. And, you know, I've got cases here in Nevada that we've talked about on this program about the old guy who was driving up north on Highway 80 and vanished. I guess if you really wanted to expand your parameters to include strange disappearances, vanishing into thin air, you could have a heck of a lot more cases, but there has to be a limit at some point.
Yeah, and we're trying to keep this really tight with the elements that we have. And, boy, I'll tell you, you know, we've had missing people, families contact us about their kids, and it's hard to turn people away, especially when they're missing loved ones. But we got to keep that tight, because if we go outside the bounds of that, then we're stepping into areas where we really may not understand what's happening, whereas we're getting closer to understanding this.
But you're not quite there.
No, I'm not.
Any plans for another edition of this book? I mean, I think you could probably go on forever, couldn't you?
This week, I was sitting in the office of a very rural county sheriff in Colorado, and there's a couple of disappearances in his county, and we were sitting around talking, and I was explaining the things in the book, and his eyes lit up, and he says, you know, he goes, I've always thought that these disappearances up here don't make sense. He goes, I don't have the manpower to commit to really do a thorough investigation. But he says, when you show me a map of Colorado, and I start to see that there is some consistency amongst, okay, in the northern part of the state, there's three boys that have disappeared in 65 years, and there's not another boy that fits that criteria for the whole state. He goes, what am I supposed to think? He goes, you're the first group that's ever put this together in a way where we can sit there and understand it. He goes, something is going on. We need some help with this.
Well, that's another aspect we haven't even touched on tonight, but we've talked about briefly in the past, is that in these clusters, they seem to come in groups, like young boys in one cluster, older people in another cluster, adults. And that just is another weird aspect of this that's hard to explain. We're going to go to a wild card lines, all of them full, when we come back. Our conversation with Dave Politis continues right after this on Coast to Coast AM. All right, here we go to the wild card lines. Tony in Illinois, thanks for being so patient. What's on your mind?
Thanks a lot, George. This is absolute synchronicity. Dave Politis, absolutely great work. I'm definitely going to look into this book. This is a guarantee for me. I was 9 years old, actually eight, going on nine.
Hey, Tony, I got to tell you, your phone is really breaking up, so you're going to have to jump into this real quick because you're making an awful noise on our end here.
My dad was building a house in Piedmont, Missouri. I was 8 years old. I saw a snake. I was at a distance from it. It backed into its hole. The next thing I know, I was completely displaced. It took me 2 hours to find my way back home just from my dad working with a hammer. But it completely displaced me from a pond to a complete part of the forest of Piedmont, Missouri. Absolutely strange. When I got back, my dad said that that's not the only thing strange that happened if you got lost, because when he was hammering out on his house, some giant shadow went over his house And, you know, when he looked up, he didn't see anything. He thought he was going to see a bird. He did not see anything.
Hey, Tony, I'm sorry to cut you off, but the sound from your phone on this end is really terrible. But I'm telling you that you have a great story here to tell, and I'd like to hear more of it. If you could try to call back or if you can contact Dave, I think he'd like to hear your story in great detail. We'll provide information. If you'll hang on for a second, we'll give you a link where you can get a hold of him. But I'm sorry that we have a problem with your phone. I know you've been holding on a long time. We're going to go to Andy in Los Angeles on the Wild Card line. Hi, Andy.
Hi, George. You're a great interviewer. I really enjoy you. And Dave, you are also a great guest. I have a quick comment, and then I'll bring up a few quick points. And you can feel free to comment on any point that you think is of significance. You know, it's very unusual to me that, and I don't believe in coincidences either, that the government would not keep records or leave a paper trail. And secondly, because if the public is not aware, they will not be able to put the pieces of the puzzle together. Secondly, if you can comment on one or more of these points that I'll make rapid fire here. Was there any one or two colors that seemed to stand out in the abductions? Number two, an entire village in China, in a mountain village, disappeared in the last 5 to 10 years, and it's on the internet. Men, women, and kids all gone. Number three, has anyone checked into the possible in the cluster areas of the GPS coordinates, approximate coordinates, if there's a pattern there?
That's all you get. We got a whole bunch of people, so three questions is all you get, but thanks for calling. Dave, did you write those down? What colors to begin with?
No specific colors, just bright colors in general, yellows, oranges, things like that. GPS coordinates, I can tell you that we've put the disappearances on a map, and that's how, based on the last location the person was seen, and that's how we determined the location for us.
The other question was about China, some disappearance of an entire village. Does that ring a bell?
No, it doesn't.
Okay, Andy, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Dale in Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Hello, George, and hello, Dave. A quick comment and then a question, and then I'll hang up. I grew up in St. Clair County, Alabama, in an area called Ball Rock. And growing up there, me and another neighbor friend went up on Ball Rock because you could get there by road. He points out to me a cave. We ascend down in this cave, and I get scared and come out of it because we have no flashlight or anything. Next thing, has there been any cases reported in Alabama? I know Mount Cheehaw is the highest point, 2,407 feet, but have there been any missing cases in Alabama? Thank you for taking my call.
Okay, Dale. Any come to mind?
You know, none come to mind, but I do know that there were some in Alabama. In the Eastern book, we documented it. I don't recollect. I mean, there's 600 cases that come to mind. You know, George, one thing, I did get a question on my end as well. It said, have any military personnel vanished during training exercises? None that I know of in North America, but I doubt that they'd release that information. And then one other thing is that we have always looked for someone who is a remote viewer who's retired from the military. We would like to use them. And that question has come up many times. And if we don't know how to find one, but if somebody is listening out there and wants to work with us, we would like to work with them.
I'll help you find one. I'll help you find a group of them. We can talk about that off the air. Dale, thanks for the call. Joe in Washington on the Wild Card line. Good morning, Joe.
How you doing, George? It's an honor to talk to you. Another great show.
Thank you.
Mr. Politis, I really appreciate your tenacity in this subject. I think you do a great job with it.
Thanks.
Quick story. We got a call one day that of a missing person, so we went out to lend a hand. We probably sent five officers and horses, and there was sheriff's department. There was probably 60 people total, and we were looking for about a six-year-old girl that had walked to a small creek from a campground with her cousin, probably 50 yards from the campground, and her cousin went back to the campground, and this little girl disappeared. So we looked for 2 days. She was wearing a pair of flip-flops, pair of shorts and a tank top. And it was, temperature was probably 65 degrees during the day and got down to 30, 32 at night. And we searched for 2 days. We had two Air Force helicopters with their flare units at night flying. We had a law enforcement helicopter flying, and the search went on 24 hours a day. Well, about 2 days later, this little girl just walked out to the road, probably less than a half a mile from where she disappeared, and looked like nothing had happened. I mean, she spent 2 days or two nights in the woods, and she came out looking like nothing had happened. She was in great shape. She was, you know. My question is, how many kids do you think that disappear like this? That, to me, it was extremely strange. We couldn't believe that we found her. We couldn't believe that she was that close, and we couldn't believe that she was in that good of shape.
Wow.
But how many kids do you think just disappear and then are found a day or two later and it's never reported as like a missing person?
Many. Many. In fact, that scenario you just explained has happened many times. And the issue with that is that the victim isn't debriefed many times and questioned. Everyone's happy that she's found, but nobody wants to take the time at that point to really sit down with her, debrief her, and find out how this thing evolved.
Well, her family are Native Americans, and she didn't. Her parents didn't want anything to do with talking to anybody. Once we found her, she was just, they were gathered up, and they were pretty much gone. But so there was no debrief in this one for sure.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, but that's the norm as well.
It's as if people are happy. Look, we're glad that the kid's alive and been through this ordeal. We're not going to bother her anymore, right?
And you know, that she is Native American puts that much of an unusual twist on it, because I am somebody that knows a lot about Native American history and Native American lore and their myths and legends, and that just brings that much more question to my mind right away.
Joe, appreciate that call. I hope you'll be in contact with Dave, and maybe you guys can swap some notes on that case. If it's not in Dave's database, it's one that maybe needs to be there. Appreciate the call. Wildcard line, Athena in Durango, Colorado. Good morning, Athena.
Hi, George. Hi, Dave. There seems to be a very peculiar pattern to these abductions. Number one, the people that are taken are spying on nature. The people in the watchtowers, the guy bird watching, or they're conquering nature. They're trying to climb a mountain, hiking, you know, etc. And, you know, nature doesn't deal a lot with technology. Maybe nature is trying to find out how to use technology against us the way we use technology against them. You'll notice that when the children are taken, they leave behind all the technological things, the clothes. And the children are usually found because children are not so technologically advanced. They probably wouldn't need as much information. But the adults don't seem to be found as much. And when they are found, they're dead. Like maybe their technology information has been sucked out of them, talking about those spirits that came out of the boulders, you know, come at night, and how nature is angry at us about our technology. You hear that all the time. Maybe they are really angry, and they're tired of being spied on and not getting any feedback for what they're giving us.
Well, that's an interesting perspective. Dave, any thoughts?
Not really, no.
It's interesting speculation. It's not something you could prove one way or another, but it's as interesting an idea as we've heard. Thanks, Athena.
We're using technology.
Yeah, we got you. We understand. I wish we could prove it one way or another. Thanks for the call. East of the Rockies, Mike in West Palm Beach. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, how you doing? I want to tell your listeners the Bermuda Triangle is live and well. I live in West Palm Beach, which is at the apex of the triangle. And if you go to Google, look up the following, Florida missing or disappearing swimmers. Every so often, a person drowns, of course, a tourist. They find the bodies later. Two recent cases got the attention of the press, though. One was a Israeli millionaire disappeared off his yacht, who was parked right near Fort Lauderdale, never found his body.
Then there was another one a few months ago that really got people where I live upset. There was a girl who was going out in the water, got caught in a riptide, and was screaming for help. A man jumps in front of dozens of witnesses, saves the girl, and he disappears. They never found his body. That really got the press's attention. Another issue was this. Every few weeks, an empty boat comes ashore here. And these are from illegal immigrants. And the assumption is they come on the beach and they run inland. But the problem is nowhere for them to go. Because these are condos on the beach. Their Rush Limbaugh lives here. You got tremendous police patrols. They never report what happened to these people. All they report is these boats keep coming in every few weeks. They're empty and there's no one around. And there's another issue too. But I live with the Bermuda Triangle. The press doesn't mention anything. They don't give follow-up stories about these boats and what's going on.
Okay, Mike, we're going to give Dave a chance to talk about that. Dave, you mentioned earlier you try to weed out cases involving water, I guess, because you have to draw a limit somewhere, but that's pretty interesting stuff.
You know, he brought up an interesting point that I've never talked about publicly, but about 3 weeks ago I got a letter from a man in Finland who had gotten my books, and he'd done some research on his own, and that in my missing East and West books, he found that on one day where two kids disappeared, a plane disappeared in the Bermuda Triangle, and then he found that another plane disappeared in Lake Erie or Lake Michigan that was a Navy plane, and that was in correlation to one of the disappearances in one of the books.
Appreciate the call, Mike. West of the Rockies, Reba in Washington, which, as we learn in this new volume of Missing 411, is a hotbed of these kinds of cases. Reba?
Yes, hello there. I have three areas that I'm kind of curious about. I do rock hounding, and I'd like to know if there have been any of these disappearances around the Lolo Pass, Montana area, or the Red Top Mountain area northeast of Clee Ellum, Washington, or the Colville National Forest.
So I would say that anywhere in that Washington Cascade corridor, there's been disappearances. Unusual disappearances. And so I would say, as I've told everyone that I speak in front of, that I wouldn't hike alone, number one. I wouldn't go into the woods without a firearm, and I wouldn't go into the woods without a personal locator beacon. I've never taken a case where somebody's disappeared that was armed and had a locator beacon. There's been people that have disappeared under the criteria that have been armed, and there's been one person that disappeared under the criteria that had a locator beacon, never with both.
She also asked about...
I'm going to take that under advice.
She asked about Montana, Dave. I know you do have a section in the new book that talks about cases from Montana.
Yes, and it's lengthy, and there's a lengthy section in the Western book as well. I mean, when you have 600 cases, I just can't remember them all.
Sure, I understand. First-time caller, Alan in Texas. Hi, Alan. Welcome to the show.
Hey, George, how are you?
Okay.
Yeah, one afternoon I left out of Reno, Nevada, heading towards Portland, Oregon, and I was, I'm a truck driver, and I was bobtail, and the weather seemed to deteriorate, and I was on California 89 and stopped at a rest area and went to bed on Friday afternoon, Saturday, early morning, and I have a computer in the truck that tracks my movement and time, and it showed that I had stopped Saturday and didn't wake up until Tuesday morning when somebody knocked on the truck. And I don't know if I was taken or lost of time, if, you know, does that seem to happen sometimes too?
Are there, Dave, among your cases, people who just basically go to sleep and then wake up days later and that's all they remember?
You know, that sounds more like something John Mack had written about in his book, but the consistent element there is that the people just don't have a recollection of what occurred.
Yeah, missing time type case. Thanks, Alan. Sorry we can't give you more info. There's a caller named Leon in Washington who says he's got a case involving a disappearance of a military personnel, but I'm sorry that we're not going to have time to get to it. Leon, I hope you will go ahead and contact Dave to share your information with him. And I'm sorry that you're on the phone, but we're less than a minute away here, so we're not going to have time to deal with it. Dave, where do you go from here? What's your next step in collecting information about this mystery?
I think we're still making small steps here. I think we'll probably hear a lot more from your audience and from around the world about other cases. And honestly, I think it's starting to come down, and we're going to refine it a little more. And I think the clusters explain it a little better, and hopefully we'll come to some resolution in the next couple of years.
We need some pressure on the government, too, to start keeping a list, or if such a list exists in secrecy, to make it public.
Yes, that would be nice.
Yeah, have you ever tried talking to members of Congress or your own congressman?
When we've been refused FOIA requests before, I've gone to a congressman and asked them to intervene, and they failed in their intervention as well and said that they couldn't get the report. So I'm not sure if they even have any leverage.
One last question. Where do people get your book?
Go to canammissing.com by Canadian American, canammissing.com.
And do people need to, you think, read volumes 1 and 2 before they do 3, or can they just jump right into it?
I think it'd be probably easier to understand the congruence of the elements in each of the disappearances if you started with the East or the West, wherever you live, and then go to the North America book. But if you went straight to North America, it'd be understandable.
David Politis, thanks as always, man. It's fascinating stuff. I hope that one day we get to the bottom of this mystery.
Thanks a million, George.
Talk to you soon. Missing 411 is the book. Hope you will all check it out. I want to thank our crew there at Coast to Coast, Nathan and Gina, Lex and Dan Galante. And I'll be back next Sunday, everyone. Good night.